Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
All right, welcome into another edition of the Nick Bob Podcast, live from the AOI Studios, aka my basement office. And one of the things I love about this office, not only the table that's fantastic, given by the good folks at AOI, but the chair that I am sitting in that the good folks at AOI hooked me up with. It's the Aeron chair from Herman Miller. I can be down here for hours watching film, doing game prep, different things, and feel comfortable the entire time. This chair is mastered with the latest research around the science of sitting, advancements in materials, manufacturing, and technology. If you're looking for a new chair, highly recommend the Aeron from Herman Miller. Check out AOI on the web, aoicorp.com. That's aoicorp.com, or give them a ring, 402-896-5520. Reminder, subscribe to the podcast. Just click that subscribe button. That way, anytime drop a new pod, boom, it is waiting for you right there on your phone. Leave a 5-star rating and review while you're at it. Well, it is part two of my podcast conversation with Doug McDermott. By now, you've listened to part one. You've gotten tons of unbelievable insight and anecdotes from the mind of Doug McDermott throughout his career. It was an amazing one. One of the most decorated college basketball careers in the history of the sport. 3-time All-American, National Player of the Year, 3,000-point score. Just unbelievable. So you know what? I'm going to stop yapping. Let's get to it. All right. Here is part two of my amazing chat with the all-time leading scorer in the history of Creighton basketball, the greatest Blue Jay of all time, Doug McDermott.
There is something therapeutic, and like I always tell people, if I had like, you know, the whole thing, like if you had 24 hours to live, what would you do? I just think I'd block out an hour to be alone in a gym with a ball. Like it's the best thing in the world.
Yeah. It's the best feeling, you know, just having just you in the gym. You know, sometimes guys are like, you sure you're gonna be a rebounder like that? I'm like, no,
nope, I want to be
I want to be out there by myself. Just envisioning game like situations. Yep. It's just the crowd. And there's nothing like it. You feel amazing leaving there. It just builds up your confidence too.
Junior year, I circled three things. I remember hanging 84 points on Wisconsin in Vegas. Like people got to remember that just didn't happen. Like scoring 80 on Wisconsin was on Bo Ryan's team. Like that was like unheard of. And then the 41 points you had against Wichita State on senior day when they were really good. And it clinched a share of the Missouri Valley Conference title. Those two things blew me. Like those were two things that stood out to me about that year. Do you remember those two moments?
Yeah, for sure. I kind of forgot about the Vegas one. That was impressive. You know what we did to Wisconsin, and you know they usually grind it out, and like they had adjust their style to us, the way we were getting up and down, and you could tell they're just kind of rattled by it. But you know, they had such a good team with Bergeron and
Decker was a
Jordan
freshman.
Taylor, yeah. Decker, all those guys. Kaminsky was like a freshman.
Yep.
They had a lot of talent on that team, and that was huge for our group because just beating a Big Ten team like that in Vegas was huge for our group. And then like you said, the Wichita game, to win the title, the title at home, that was probably, I mean, people always ask about, you know, the atmospheres and stuff. And I think that I put that one right up there for us, you know, just playing against a rival like that, having those boys come to town, you know, sometimes they like to talk a little.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that was one of my favorites that I was ever a part of. Just people were asking me about the one more year and all that stuff. And,
right.
You know, we just went out there and put on a show and, you know, and try to hold that, you know, Missouri Valley Conference title and cut down the net in our own arena. That's something you don't get to be a part of very much.
So, okay. So you bring up the one more year. Let's get to now the big decision. You're going through the pre-draft process, getting, you know, evaluated, all those things. Take everybody behind the scenes of on your decision to stay. What would all went into that?
Yeah. You know, you towards the end of the year, you know, I felt like, you know, I was a first round pick, and, you know, whenever teams are telling you that, going through the evaluations, you know, they think you're going to be this range. I thought there was no chance I'd, you know, slip to the second, so I definitely had to think about it, and it took me a lot longer than I thought it would, you know, just because it's always a dream to play in the NBA, and, you know, we were getting the feedback, and, you know, everyone's telling me it's a weak draft this year, next year's way better, all these Kentucky freshmen are coming in. This would be the time to go, you know, if you want to be a first rounder. And I honestly took that a little to heart. I'm like, well, I think I can be a first round pick next year too. You know, I don't care what the draft looks like. And, you know, I almost use that as a chip on my shoulder. Yeah. I remember it came down to the one of the final days where I was going back and forth. You know, teams were telling me, maybe we'll take you here, this, that, but there's no fully guarantee. And I just remember walking in, you know, to my dad's office and, you know, having Rast right there, the next door at the old gym. We were going over just the draft one more time, looking at names, like looking at next year's draft. And I'm like, you know what? Like, screw this. I'm coming back. It just finally all hit me. I'm like, you're going into the Big East. Yep. This could be a chance to, you know, take Creighton to the next level. I want to be a part of this. And I was just, my dad, like, are you sure? I'm like, yes, 100%. He got up in his chair so fast. He's like, all right, let's go to Bruce's alley, Bruce's office. And I'll never forget that, walking in, telling Rass, and all of us like hugging and celebrating. And I was like, okay, I'm officially coming back now. So that was a funny day. And you know, just going to class afterwards just kind of solidified it. I'm like, this just feels right. I was not ready. You know, I was so happy to be coming back.
So a couple of things with your senior year, the Marquette game, mm-hmm. New Year's Eve, the first Big East game, the atmosphere. I remember you scored first possession, you hit a three, and you were, because Jamil Wilson was maybe running his mouth to you, and then you were running, like, they were doing push-ups during the jump ball. Like, they thought they were going to come in and punk you guys, and you guys punched him right in the mouth. There are a few moments you remember, and like that first Big East game, New Year's Eve, that was pretty special.
That was special. The only part I'm mad about was we had like a curfew afterwards. We had to go out to the Marriott and by Crossroads. Like, we couldn't do anything after the game.
Oh, no.
It was awful. We were just so excited beating those guys. And just the atmosphere there was insane because it was late game on New Year's.
Oh, man, people were lit up.
So it was awesome. And, you know, I still talked to a guy actually from Marquette that he was a walk-on on that team. And he said he was me during scout team for that game.
Yeah.
And he said, we went over that play probably 50 times. The first play you guys ran, the stacks play, where you're going to get a three at the top of the key, and they still messed it up. Like, so I always got a kick out of that. He tells me that all the time. They literally went over it like before the game, like talked about it in the huddle before the tip off. All right, here it's coming. And then boom. And he said from there, you could tell just they were all messed up.
Like, uh-oh.
And didn't know what to do with me and Ethan. And I always get a huge kick out of that.
I remember I think I've told you a story. I don't know if I have, but pretty early in the conference schedule, you guys played at Seton Hall. And I was doing like the pregame radio, and a Seton Hall fan kind of grabbed my shoulder, and I turned, and he's like, hey, which one's McDermott? Which one's McDermott? I'm like, he's right there. He's got the t-shirt on, and he looks at you, and he looks at me, and he goes, that's it? That's McDermott? You kidding me? He's that? And then you had one of your classic, like, first 5 minutes of the game, you had like 11 or 12, like, instantly. And he was sitting like two or three rows behind me. And I remember after seeing Hulk kind of time out, I took my headset off and I turned and looked at him. I went, he's pretty good, isn't he? And he went, yeah, he's pretty good. I said, yeah. I remember that, but that was kind of like, the reason I tell the story is I do feel like there was, that was a microcosm of like still the bit. There still was an element about you that people are like, nah, we don't need to double. Man, this guy, we can shut him down. There was a little arrogance at times that first run through in the Big East of teams feeling like they can handle you.
Yeah, I think that played to my advantage a lot. You know, I think you'd see that a lot, you know, with in warm-ups, you can just tell in the pregame warm-ups, you know, guys are kind of looking down at you laughing, like, oh, we got this dude. Like, you know, everyone's kind of clapping in your face. Right. Like, and I always use that as motivation. Like, it got me so locked in to play the game because I just felt like these dudes think, you know, they're going to shut us down. They're going to shut me down. And I love that as motivation. And, right. You know, I think that another funny story, just kind of similar to your Seton Hall one, on a different level, we were at Villanova, the Rocky game, where it exploded. We're in pregame warmups, and we're at the Wells Fargo Center, and yeah, there's this little kid sitting on the sideline, and those Philly kids, and they kind of they say whatever's on their mind to you, you know, and we're going through warmups, and like, none of us could make a shot. Like, this kid was like, miss, oh, like, laughing every single time. Like, he was just pissing us off. Like,
yeah.
And it was just hilarious. And I remember stepping onto that floor and started the game, and Rocky hit like 7 threes in a row. Jahan was hitting. He was hitting. I was hitting. And I remember looking over that kid and smiling at him, and he was just bawling. He was bawling to his mom. And like all this stuff, and I was kind of like, I was bullying him maybe a little too much.
Oh, but he deserved
and,
it.
He deserved it, man. He was going at us in warmups, and I'll never forget that. I went up and talked to him after the game, and like gave him like a T-shirt or something. But that was hilarious. It really kind of got us all going because we were all just like, can this kid shut the hell up?
Yeah.
and that kind of sparked that night.
That was. That, you know, I know we've said this a million times. Boy, that was a game to remember. I mean, that night was one of the most incredible. I think you guys made your first 9 threes. You made 14 threes in the first half. It was, I don't think people, I could try to do it justice with what the vibe in the arena was like, but it was unbelievable. And then Ethan, there was one trailer three he hit in the first half that was literally closer to half court than it was the three-point line. It was just like that game was like a culmination of all you guys' skill sets coming together and exploding to me.
For sure, yeah. It's just one of those games where, you know, you got to throw it on the highlights at least, you know, a couple times a year just to kind of remember that night actually happened. Like, it doesn't seem like it was real what Rocky was doing. And I remember talking to Jay Wright at like a USA practice a couple summers ago, and he was like, still just couldn't believe it. Like, he's just like still shook over it. And we got a big kick out of that.
Senior night, we've talked about this before, but it's good. I mean, senior night, 45 points, Providence, you go over 3,000. You were on a mission, right? Like, when the game started, you had like a, you were going for the jugular and going for 40. Like, that was on your head, right?
It was, you know, and people ask me about that all the time. I honestly, like, I don't remember that night very much. I was so locked in. I was so nervous. I was so nervous the night before because everyone's reminding me how many I need. You know, people are asking me in the media, you know, you need 27, whatever. I'm like, I don't think it's possible. I tried downplaying it as much as I could. Honestly, I was more nervous for my senior night speech after the game because I hate public speaking. Yeah. I was like, I was so like locked into the post-game festivities, like having to do a senior night and all this stuff. And I kind of blacked out, and I remember being as aggressive as I could possibly be. And once we got off to that, you know, fast start, I was like, dang, this is going to happen. You know, that night couldn't have gone any better for, you know, the fans, our team. It was just an unbelievable night.
So, unfortunately, I do got to ask about the Baylor game, because that's one of the, you know, in the NCAA tournament, it's one of the most, it was just, the one thing I've learned as I've, like, continued to grow through sports and all that stuff is, like, you can live with results as long as you play how you're capable of playing. Like, if you play how you're capable of playing and you lose, that, you shake hands, whatever. It's just that, that game, it felt like that game was over in the first like 3 minutes. They hit a bunch of threes. You guys got flustered with the zone. What do you remember about that, the Baylor game?
Yeah, it's so deflating. You know, I don't think you can practice against zone, but you can't, practice against Isaiah Austin and Corey Jefferson at length. You know, it's once you're out there, it's like, dang, you can't even pass. Like, you've got their hands are everywhere. Their arms are so long. And they kind of just had us battled, you know, because there's a couple of guys scouting report wise that hadn't shot it particularly great on the year from three, and they come out and hit, you know, their first, you know, six or seven shots, and it's just deflating, you know. And I you got to tip your cap to them because they played a hell of a game. And I mean, I just wish we could have played some of our basketball that they're accustomed to. And, you know, we never had seen a zone like that with that kind of length. You know, it's different, you know, going against, you know, the scout team for Creighton, trying to do the Baylor zone, and you get out there and it's just, you can't get anything you want. And it was tough. You know, I wish we could redo that one. But unfortunately you can. And, the ball bounces at times, and, you know, we tried to flush that from our memory and just really embrace in the locker room after the game about the run we went on, you know, the last 4 years.
It's incredible. Two or three things, and we'll let you run, Dougie. Thanks for your time.
You're good, man.
The special group. I mean, Ethan Rogge, Jahinz Maniga, Grant Gibbs, Austin Chapman. You mentioned Gregory, Avery Dingman, Will Artino. Even Doc Dorwart, great guy behind the scenes. What do you think clicked for you guys? Like, what made it work? Because you guys, it wasn't just you and Gibbs that had chemistry. Like, all of you guys had it.
Absolutely, yeah. It was such a good collective group of guys. And, you know, I think me and Gibbs know each other from Iowa, and him and Ethan being roommates, and me and Jahinz being roommates. And I think that's the beauty of being at a place like Creighton, you know, such a small, tight-knit campus where you're hanging out with each other a lot. You know, we all live really close to each other. Everyone got along. There wasn't a single guy that came through the 4 years I was there that, you know, we didn't get along with. And, you know, I think you bring in a guy like Devin Brooks, you know, a guy from, you know, Harlem, New York, and he fit right in with us. You know, it's one of those deals where our culture just kind of took over, and we were able to, you know, bring up guys from different backgrounds, you know, to a team that, you know, had a great culture. And I think it starts with Gibbs, and I think the walk-ons deserve a lot of credit for how the culture was built, you know, with Dorwer and Ross, Taylor, Derek, you know, go down the line. Those guys busted their asses every day in practice and made it tough on us. And even guys like Cross, you know, guys that were there, you know, my freshman year. Our scout team is probably better than our our actual team. Our freshman year with Croft and Gregory and Gibbs and Cody Engel. Just so many guys that went through the program that, you know, don't get a whole lot of recognition, but deserve a lot of our success that we had.
I think a lot of guys appreciate their head coach more after they're done playing for him. Like, it's kind of human nature. What's that been like with your dad, now that you've kind of been away from him and you've played for a bunch of different coaches and you can reflect? What do you appreciate or admire about Greg McDermott and his coaching?
Just his style. You know, he really allows his assistant coaches to be themselves. And, you know, it was just cool just being around, you know, guys like D-Rock and Lutz and, you know, the whole gang. Just the way he runs the program, you know, always has us out in the community. You know, he almost takes basketball second. You know, he always sets stuff up for us to do stuff in the community, go visit a sick man or, you know, someone on their last days of their lives, or going to visit kids at hospitals. That stuff always came first with him. And, you know, I think that just shows how good of a man he is. He's still doing it to this day with his teams, and guys just love him. You know, he's a great guy to play for. Yep. you know, he can be tough at times, but at the end of the day, you know, he's always got your best interests. And I think the program's still going to take off. I think they're really close to making that push. And, you know, I don't think there's a better guy that could be leading them than him.
Get you out here on this, Dougie. Everybody's got their own story and trail and journey, but were you ever, and maybe even subconsciously, influenced by guys like Kyle, guys like Tolliver, guys like Nate Funk, who were like you in the sense that they weren't highly touted guys that everybody was had a million offers and all that when they arrived at Creighton, but they achieved everything they wanted and more at Creighton. Like, Creighton, mm-hmm. like to me, Creighton's kind of made its... When I think of Creighton basketball, a part of it is like they take diamonds in the rough. They take guys that not a lot of people wanted, and those guys come through the program and explode. Do you think somewhere in your subconscious that was like rooted in there?
Absolutely. And that's when my freshman year, just walking down those halls and seeing the photos of, you know, Kyle in a Sixers jersey and Anthony and whatever jersey he was in at the time.
Yeah, he's played for every team.
Just seeing the blueprint that they've set and, you know, following their careers, being a little kid in Cedar Falls and watching those teams, usually heartbreak, you know, the Panthers, you know. I always hated Creighton when I was young because I saw these guys, Nate Funk, you know, Ryan Sears, Nick Baugh.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
just all these guys, you know, that set the blueprint. And being from Iowa, too, with Nate and Kyle yep. and Sears, you know, I think, I just felt like it was kind of destiny when I showed up and had a good freshman year. I'm like, I can really do this. I can play at the next level, you know, if I put my mind to it. And Kyle, you know, made it possible, you know, for all of us. And someone that obviously we all look up to as a player, but, you know, more importantly as a person with everything he's done and impacted the world.
Well, Doug, I mean, you need to really, really try to go into sponge mode and soak everything up, because you have no idea the thrill you provided everyone for 4 years, man. It's an unbelievable career. Congratulations. I've told you a million times. It was, I can't believe I had a front row seat to all 3,000 points of watching you, man. So I appreciate you and soak it up this weekend, man.
Absolutely. Will do, Nick. I really appreciate everything you've done for me, and really excited for your future, too, as a broadcaster. And I'm glad we could be a part of all this together.
Thank you, Dougie. I appreciate you, man.
Yep, no problem, Nick. I'll talk to you.
See you, Dougie.
A Parkville Media Production.